Let's put an end to war. It's your resident peace, Nick, Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks for rolling. I'm in here with Lil Queen Trash Mouth. And also, we have a little special guest that slid on in. It's Travis. Travis and I are going to play Confused Americans and just sit back and let Lil Queen Trash Mouth dump the food news on us. Good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yay.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. It gets lonely in here. People get bored of hearing me.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. In my experience, that's not true.
Oh, you're so kind.
And I do want to say I've been hearing a lot that people have been loving this combo of Travis Dream Queen. Do you have a DJ name or a radio alias?
When I was DJing here at the radio station, it was T's Takeover, so T.
Straightforward alias. Not like mine. So I guess I want to start by just defining food insecurity, because I think a lot of people, when they think about like food insecurity, maybe go to like a more extreme place than it really is. Like, food insecurity doesn't have to be you have no food in your house, you have no idea where your next meal is coming from, you have no money for food. It's like actually a lot more nuanced than that. Feeding America's official definition is pretty broad, where it just says it's when people don't have enough to eat or don't know where their next meal is coming from. And like the doesn't have enough to eat is so nuanced. There was a couple years ago when I started my current day job, I was inputting surveys into like an online database for the FreshRx program, which was a produce prescription program that used to happen in New Mexico. It did not get funded last year in the legislature, so that program is on its way out. There are other produce prescription programs on the horizon, just not that one. But it was the intake and outtake surveys of patients that were participating in this program. So patients who had either diet-related illnesses or screened for food insecurity. And like the food insecurity questions kind of blew my mind, because it ranged from anything to I don't have food in the house to, oh, I ate less on one day to make sure that there was food, or someone else in my house did. It didn't actually have to be the person getting screened, right? So like that's a pretty broad definition, and it made me start thinking of like every time I eat out or cook a meal, it's in this framework of, oh, how can I stretch this across multiple days? Like, this isn't just one meal. This has got to be, I'll save this side of rice so that I can put this with it. And then I realize, I'm like, that is food insecurity.
Is it okay for you to tell us where you work and what your experience is with food?
I think, yeah, yes. Okay. So I work at the New Mexico Farmers Marketing Association, which is a statewide nonprofit that deals primarily with farmers markets and helping them get formed and off the ground. But the program that I work for is currently a federal grant funded program that runs in tandem with SNAP, which is used to be called food stamps.
What's the SNAP stamp?
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. I couldn't remember that one, but I got it. And so I work for a program called the Double Up Food Bucks program, which if you spend your SNAP dollars on New Mexico grown produce, I mean, it's really specific to fruits and vegetables plus beans right now. There's some controversy around getting nuts added to that, because technically that's produce, but the USDA considers it a protein. Essentially, it doubles your SNAP dollars when you spend it on local fruits and vegetables. So it helps local farmers. It helps locals on food assistance and non-locals, because you can use SNAP in any state and still access this program when you're here in this state. So pretty amazing thing. The future is very uncertain for a lot of reasons that I will get into. And then I also run our local food distribution program every Friday, 9 to 9:30 at the firehouse. There's a sign-up sheet, but you can also email madridfoodprogram@gmail.com if you need food.
So, and is there an income requirement?
Absolutely not.
Excellent.
No work requirement, no nothing. Just how many people and Do you have dietary restrictions? And do you need food delivered? Only access-based questions to increase access, not limit access.
Can you say just really quickly, since we're talking about local, a word about the little food pantries and also the Cerrios mobile food pantry where we pick up food from Madrid?
So the Cerrios mobile food pantry is run by the Food Depot, which is one of five food banks in the state of New Mexico. They service Santa Fe County and I think eight other counties in northern New Mexico. Their reach is pretty wide. They're doing a lot of work. But they bring their mobile food pantry to Cerrios in between the railroad tracks and the state park office from 11:30 to 1 on the first and third Thursdays of every month. Shout out to that volunteer team. They bring, again, a lot of our like pantry staples that we use at our food program with that mobile food pantry. So,
did you just say about our
and then the little the free little food
you're
pantries.
You're just so busy.
Well, free little food pantries is a community endeavor. That one's not. The idea with that is to be a freestanding, give what you're not using, take what you want to use. And so far they've done pretty well. I know they get kind of low sometimes, and then I will kind of do a drive around. We've done drive arounds to refill them with things that we have extra in at the food distribution program. And I just have to say, please don't put produce in the free little food pantries. It's happened a couple times lately. Let's keep that to non-perishable items, please.
Yeah. And those are located here at KMRD at 2870 Highway 14 and also down at, is that Gypsy Plaza was the corner there by the thrift store?
Firehouse Lane. Firehouse Lane, I think.
Or right. Under the corner there on the right.
Three Firehouse Lane going one way or 2842 Highway 14 on the other side. So that
right
corner.
At the corner there by the tavern and the thrift grocer corner. Yeah. That little corner there. The
community resources corner.
Yes. What's the most pressing thing that you think people need to know right now? I know I brought you in. Mm-hmm. I asked you to join because things are changing.
Yeah, that
quickly.
Food access is going to get really scary really fast, and no one is going to tell you it's coming. I think that's the number one thing I would want people to know.
Well, you just sound like a Chicken Little. Tell us how you know this, and that's why I'm glad that we're able to share about your what your work is, where you work, how it's funded by the government. Also, you're a lifelong conscientious food person. Like you've done farming and traveling and all of that kind of stuff. So you have a heightened awareness about food.
It was through farming that I realized like how fragile our food systems have become across the board. Because I think this winter of 2017 into the summer of 2018, we were very, 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 very dry. Very warm, very dry, like until the last couple of years, like the worst that it had ever been in my life in New Mexico. And like by the summer of 2018, so many farmers that I had been working adjacent to for like the last 5 years were afraid their acequias were going to run. Like, I mean, it was like a week or two away of we might have to close a farm that has been producing for 400 years. Unless it rains, like in the next 6 to 14 days, like it was that close. And like for so many local farms in northern New Mexico. And that's when I realized like, and I mean, I kind of like, I, you know, you feel it before just working with local farmers and seeing number one, how few there are, how few people are actually growing our food in this country. And honestly, how old they are. Because that's also very scary. It's like something like 2% of the U.S. population is engaged in agriculture. And that's just agriculture. That's not even just growing human food. That's all the ag. As we know, a lot of our ag is not growing human food.
For livestock, right?
Yes, exactly. Food for our food. And then of that 2%, something like 85% of them, and this was like when I was farming, so almost a decade ago, 85% of those people are 65 or older. That's a number, a scary numbers game. And then when you start looking at what's been going on with industrial farmers, literally like kidnapping people, like, oh, right. Because the actual farm, like they're aging out and dying out. So now we're having to because such a small percentage of the population is engaged in actual local, sustainable, true agricultural practice anymore. We're now like trafficking people to grow our food.
Talk a little bit more about that when you say kidnapping people.
When people migrate to this country to work, which happens a lot, farms will advertise in Mexico and Central and South American nations. Come to this farm, we'll help you get your work visa, da-da-da. We'll pay to get you here. And then they do, under the guise of you'll be paid, you'll be compensated. And then people get here, and their passports are seized by the farm, and they're essentially held hostage to work on the farm for as long as said farmer desires.
I have another example of that. Passing through Florida after living in Jamaica, trying to get money to get back to New Mexico, I worked at a watermelon farm, and my first day was brutal. The amount of energy these people were putting out to pack these trucks with watermelons was basically fueled on the cocaine that they used a paycheck to pay the farmer at the end of the day. And it's just this trap setup. And even not being paid enough to be able to save money is a trap. You know, people run themselves to the ground until they die.
When you're talking about the cocaine, because I'm playing confused American here, and they said, do these migrant workers come with their own cocaine, or we're just...
No, this is Florida.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
you know...
made out of cocaine.
No, mugshot capital of the United States.
You know, I just want to say, because we have a lot of people out here who believe the rhetoric that it's its own self-contained problem, that migrants are coming here with pockets full of drugs and they're doing the human trafficking and then they're doing the working. They're doing all of it. It's just all on them, you know. Anyway, I guess that's a longer conversation about drug and human trafficking. But I just wanted to put it out there and close the loop for folks. You know, we were in New Orleans together, Little Queen Trash Mouth and Hot Diggity and I were down there and Stella. But we were on the corner in the French Quarter. We were on the corner in the French Quarter. Stella somewhere being responsible. We're like, we're here. Where's the karaoke at? As we stopped to get cigarettes and whatever street walking booze, we were approached by... a man who was houseless and had told his story about being in a Louisiana prison for several years. He said when he went in, it was flip phones, and he came out and in 2020, post Katrina, and how the whole world had changed. But he had spent all of this time working in agriculture. I think he said onions or something like that. And he was farming. And he's like, Americans have no idea where their food is coming from. That we're out here like literal slave times in the fields and not getting paid as prisoners. That's a straight up 13th Amendment.
Yep. In the same states, in the same, they're just using, it's the same infrastructure. It just got turned over.
Yeah. Turning it back over to you. What you got there on your screen?
So according to Feeding America, 47 million people, including 14 million children, experience food insecurity. I mean, again, that's going to be self-identified. And as we were talking about yesterday, there's still a big stigma around even identifying as food insecure, let alone accessing food benefits and food resources. So I would say that is a highly underreported number to me.
As we are all three here talking about the human spirit and what it takes to be vocal and vulnerable about need, you know. So yeah. What are you seeing out there? Because we know people in our little teeny village.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing that I experience on a very firsthand, personal, weekly, day-to-day basis is that I know that there are people here that could benefit from accessing local food resources who don't do it because of stigma. And I think that's what's going on, just because, again, so many people have this in like vision of food insecure being this such extreme thing when it's really, it's not. The stigma around benefit access is still very real in this country. And like, and then there's things that are done on purpose, right? Like to me, even the process of putting these benefits on a separate card and making you have to do a separate process at the machine, like that adds to stigma, you know? Any discussion, like what's going on now with HHS, right, with RFK and talking about wanting to keep sugary beverages and sweets and all this stuff off SNAP. And like, I've been watching people who I think would consider themselves like progressive and kind and caring be like, oh yeah, that's great, great idea. Finally, something I can agree with. And I'm like, that's disgusting. Don't tell people what to eat. Like, if you want to talk about like the problem with additives and sugar in our food, again, let's talk about this on a systemic level, not penalizing and targeting poor people, basically. Like, right? Like that's, and we do that all the time in this country.
Yes, often those foods are the ones that are accessible to them because of the pricing. And so it, after a while, just becomes habit that those are the brands you look for. And because you shop based on the pricing and not the ingredients, that's another insecurity. But, you know, for kids, for instance, you know, they see things totally different until everything is formed. And one of the most powerful stories I ever heard was of kids taking food that they get at school home to their siblings.
Yep.
And on the subject of stigma, when I was young, I was made fun of because I had the purple lunch ticket. You know, the purple lunch ticket meant that you got state tickets and that, you know, and even for kids to make fun of me meant that the stigma was being implanted early.
Yes. And we don't do that anymore in New Mexico. We have universal school meals in place in this state. And like a lot of people even push back against that of like, oh, well, no, there should be an income cap. And the big reason why food assistance experts said, no, there shouldn't, is because then again, it starts this filtering process that starts othering people and contributes to the stigma that like does not need to be put on children. Also, the administrative burden of having to cap it, like there would have to be someone who like does a job like me, like doing all that. And they're just like, why spend that money on food? Don't cap it. Let's go get put food in mouths. Just ultimately like the best way. Like in some ways I'm like, no, there shouldn't be bureaucracy around food, but like not the way the current administration is saying that, just of like, there should be government funded free pantries with like all the foods, free fridges everywhere throughout this country. Like there is no reason that we can't feed people in this country.
Yeah, yeah, it is. This corporate greed.
Well, I know. Okay. But like no like material, like you know what I mean? Like the scarcity mindset is false. Mm-hmm. Like all of this stuff that we talk about all of the time. And so another like this administration now that is going after like again what you can and can't buy with SNAP and claiming like, oh, we don't want you on meds, we want you to be healthier, fix your diet. Okay, well then why did you turn around in within the same administration and cut $1 billion from the USDA program to help schools and food banks purchase locally grown, locally sourced food? Why are you cutting those programs? And for people who don't know, those two programs that were ended by the Trump administration was the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, which the Madrid Food Program was benefiting from. That's how we were buying local produce through Food Depot to then distribute to our community all last summer. $421 million for that got cut, which was the whole program. I know two people in at the Food Depot who lost their jobs because of that. Not to mention, like, farming, like, to cut these programs, like, now, like when they were cut, like, in after the planting season and seed buying season and planting season for all these farmers is just also extra cruel. These people invested money and infrastructure into running these programs, and that was all just, like, ripped away from farmers, which, by the way, are generally Republican voters in a lot of states. So, like, what are you doing?
Just really quickly, I'd like to give a shout out to the other funding that we receive for the Matter Food Program, just so that people sort of don't panic that that got lost, so we don't we're not going to have a food program.
No. Yes, and if yes. The Food Depot can't get food, neither can we, because right. That's where our food comes from, and they are federally funded. So this all trickles down. I can have as much private communal funding in the world, and if I can't access the food, it doesn't matter.
Why don't you just go to Sam's Club and be like, sorry. I mean, I'm just, but okay, I pick up transmissions for people.
But time out. But what's going to happen to Sam's Club?
Right.
Because let's talk about who just got fired at the FDA. Right now, this big, long, industrialized food chain that has a lot of steps, a lot of chances for things to go very bad, like E. coli and lettuce bad. Those are so dangerous right now. And like that was starting already under Biden. Like there were so many... Actually, I guess to be fair, it started during Trump 1.0. Biden did nothing to reinstate a lot of safeguards at the FDA, and now it's even worse. So like our industrialized multi-step food chain has been getting really dangerous for a long time. That's just safety. Now let's talk about tariffs, because where does the food in Sam's Club come from? Not the United States. We export most of what we grow. People at the USDA and FDA are getting fired. I'm pretty sure it's the USDA that is in charge of inspecting meat facilities. Mm-hmm. They were already severely understaffed. They're getting gutted. Any USDA approved like meat facility is like not safe right now. Like, again, it's bad. And so like one of the things that I was noticing, again, as I said before we got on air, when I was researching this show, is like most of these sources are coming from very local newspaper, like there's like St. Paul, Minnesota, public, very hyper localized. Like there's not a lot of national attention on this. All of the government websites, that like the USDA site, the FDA website, what else? I forget what other one. I think those were maybe the only two. But I just noticed that like all of the government sponsored sites on this have been, there's no updates past November 4th. Interesting. Because what happened on November 5th? So, just an interesting thing that, like, the national media is not really talking about. Like, they talked about it when the cuts initially happened, but there hasn't been a lot of update on, like, what this is looking like in food banks on the ground. You know, I asked 2 days ago to the team that comes on the mobile food pantry, I was like, straight up, what's the vibes at the warehouse? What's going on? And they told me, they're like, well, 3 people have already lost jobs. A bunch of the food that you guys regularly order is about to be unavailable. I'm like, okay, thanks what for
types,
the heads up.
What types of food is going
to
be coming along?
Like the big canned stuff that we get regularly to supplement the Free Little Pantries and just to have like a lot of the soups, stuff like that. We don't generally get a lot of dairy from them, but they were saying the agencies that do get dairy from them are about to not have that dried up. And that is in part to... The other thing that the USDA just did under this administration was when they halted the $500 million worth of food deliveries to food banks that, by the way, had already been bought and paid for and allotted. And they're just like, no. This, to me, is like one of those structure tests that they're doing of seeing how far they can push this stuff of like what have we seen going on in Gaza for the last 16 months? Food aid being halted, food aid being denied. People starving. Okay, that's been flying for 16 months, right? Like, I mean, you know, we can get into the nuance of how everyone here in this room and on, you know, other hosts on this station feel about it. But in general, like, that's happening. That has been happening. And so, like, that those structure tests are now coming home, right? Like, to halt pre-allotted food aid, that's cruel.
It's definitely cruel. There's no doubt about that. And next week when we cover the topic of good and evil, I'm sure it's got to come up. But on top of all of that, we also have, if anyone reads the Farmer's Almanac, the productive zones for certain species of plants are moving north right now. And, you know, one of the things I've thought, like the further north it gets, suddenly vast portions of Canada will become more productive than they were. And not to mention Russia. the largest landmass that we have
on the map. Wait a minute, y'all.
I don't mean to like do anything.
The lands that we're trying to annex and the ones that we don't want to put tariffs on.
Yes.
Sorry to connect all that, but.
Please connect everything. I'm a confused American right now.
Also, Bill Gates buying up all the farmland in the U.S. Yes, like that's hedge something funds that should
buying
be scary.
Farmland, yeah, rental yeah, properties. Yep, yep. I mean, it's all a control feature that we're under, and it's cruel.
Yes.
And you know, I don't even think I realized my own food insecurity until you described it earlier, and then realizing that also in farm places, another situation that makes it a trap is that you're in the middle of nowhere. Not everybody here has reliable vehicles or the kind of money it takes to maintain them. And I often have put together food combinations that probably didn't add up to anything nutritional, but they just filled the void.
Yep.
You know, I ate ramen for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've got a kid in college, you know, thinking like this is how I'm going to meet that bill halfway. Is I'm going to make homemade kimchi and I'm going to eat ramen every day. And then all of a sudden, I'm experiencing vitamin deficiencies. You know, my nails are curling because I don't have B12 in my system or you know what I mean? And it happens when you don't have the right variety. And being, you know, creatures who developed in a tropical region and then migrated out, we've supplemented with the use of meat and whatnot to kind of get our way further north and into these areas where the weather changes and it's extreme. But now it seems like none of that even matters because we are dealing with climate change. And so with the bad always comes the good. My hope in for like a place like this is people understand water retention. Back on the topic of water, it's not just about capturing, it's how you use it. You know, if every person in town were to divert their dishwashing water to a space outside, you'd be shocked at how the desert responds to having any kind of water set up. And planting, you know, the onions, the potatoes, the things that are maybe going bad in your kitchen, understanding how compost works, you know, maybe not taking all the wood and weeds off to the dump. Maybe try an area of your yard where you can create soil because the wind is so extreme, topsoil leaves, water retention goes down. Suddenly all we have is junipers because the low branches are holding that topsoil. So the steps and the thought of food, I mean, I feel like we could ramble on this forever.
At least 10 more minutes. I mean, we got that 12.
Until we get past food and housing, we're not doing anything.
Right.
And the group, I feel like, of people who feel like they're doing something righteous in this cruel moment, they're fueled by this sort of like expose the weak. The weak are dragging us down kind of situation. But a lot of those people are from the Christian faith. And the moment that their Jesus said, when I was hungry, you fed me. Mm-hmm. When I was, you know, needing clothes, you clothed me.
Yeah.
Like that pretty much ruined all of the pages before and after that, because it's built into their initial contract. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like our contract with this country, equal rights and justice for all. That's what they're fighting, is that for all part, because they're like, yeah, well, for some of us, but we kind of like want to pick and choose. No, it says for all.
And it's like a big thing with church and food banks and food pantries and food distribution, community meals, all of that, is I will say like a lot of food distribution programs are rooted in churches. And I've seen this nationwide, locally, all of it. The thing there is like, it's not coming from like an empowerment place. It's like more coming from a like savior.
Marketing.
Yeah, like posturing as a savior position. Yes.
Like a missionary vibe.
Yes. When I was a kid, we...
Very borderline. Go ahead.
When we used to go to these pantries, it would be like a shed outside of a church. And, you know, you'd be able to go there and get these cans with white paper on them, just marked pork and beans, whatever. And I remember the struggles my mother went through when they told her she had to be showing up to church. She had to be showing up to these special classes on, and you know, why you are where you're at. And it was really insensitive, and it it was controlling.
Yep. It treats it, in a lot of those places, yeah, treat the need for food assistance as a moral failing, which it's not.
I specifically remember, and I can't say who the leader was, came out right after Trump was speaking really bad about Africa and U.S. aid. And I saw on Instagram an interview with the leader of the country that he said, is that even a real country? I forgot which one it was, but he was like, and the leader of that country responded. And in the comments, so the poster had said about having visited that country and that they were not necessarily upset to not receive U.S. aid anymore because of the strings that the United States government felt like they could pull when a country becomes dependent on them for food assistance and medical assistance. And we see that in the missionary movement all across the globe. They disenfranchise people, then they parse it back out based upon conversion to their mindset and ideology and language and all that. And if you don't do that, then it's murder, it's kidnapping, it's further exploitation and imprisonment.
And I think anyone questioning that should check out Chiquita Banana.
What's that? Yeah.
Because I've been down south, and you see the mess the banana wars left behind.
Was it called the United Fruit Company, and they changed the name to Chiquita Banana, right? Right. Yes. United Fruit Company was what it was when it was doing all really horrendous things all throughout Central and South right. America.
And I think like the
Guatemala was a really bad one.
The last time that, you know, paramilitary was used, the people were protesting because they were hoping to get day off for when one of the workers dies to attend the funeral. And that was their ask. Like, you talk about asking for things. That's pretty low on the totem pole. Asking to go to your friend's funerals because the work is too hard and you know you're going to be at one every week. And so, you know, that's deep. And it finally goes through court. And after all these years, they are finally, you know, having to deal with it. But what does it matter? They change names, things move. It takes so long, decades, you know?
Yeah, bananas, I mean, that is one thing that we, like, really can't grow anywhere in this country. So get your bananas now because those are about to go way up in price. They are almost all imported.
Or if you're moving to Costa Rica, bananas are everywhere. It's the only place I've ever been where I didn't see food insecurity because... Yeah.
Peru, too, is like that.
Yes. Bush is throwing food at you all day.
Yeah. I've been told by many, many, many people in Peru, like working class, quote, impoverished folks, oh, yeah, we're a poor country, but we're fine because we're food secure. And, like, they know that. And it's very, very true. So many different types of bananas, too, in the rest of the world. We only get one kind. It's not even the best kind.
So we've got just a few more minutes here, and you have to take off in about 5 to 6. DJ Barnacle's going to be coming up. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You're listening to KMRD LP, Madrid, New Mexico. You can learn more about KMRD at KMRD.fm. You can learn more about this show, In the Cab with Dream Queen, and In the Cab Radio at Linktree. And when you go there, you can find a link to get to archives, and this show will be posted at some point with by before Tuesday morning. You'll be able to find this wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube, etc., for free. Just please remember to like, subscribe, and share. Smash that subscribe button. I'm in the studio with Little Queen Trash Mouth, who has a show on Fridays called The Hatch Attack Hours. And that's from 10 to noon Mountain Time. And our good friend here and neighbor and fellow philosopher, Travis Stroop. You can find a couple of interviews with me and Travis in the archives, and we'll also be getting back together to talk more about Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. We just take a little break from the book club every now and then to get just, you know, a little variety in the apocalypse. So I really appreciated for you bringing up things that we could do to make ourselves more secure here, especially around water retention. And I wonder, just do y'all have more tips? Like, yeah, some hopeful things we got.
I would actually like to add on the same track as water retention, soil building, all this stuff is like, I think a lot of people hear this stuff about, oh, food insecurity, food, like local food systems, and have this like impulse to go run to Lowe's or run wherever and buy a bunch of plant starts and a bunch of soil and start a garden that, like, let's be real, fails 9 times out of 10. Yeah, like, we all know what I'm talking about. I've done it. Let's be real. Like, we've all done it. So I would just maybe encourage people this season to, like, go to the community garden. Go see what's going on down there. Sure, okay, you don't want to be there Wednesdays 4 to 6. By the way, that's when the community garden meeting time is. Maybe, you know, again, you dedicate a corner of your yard to building true soil and share that with the community garden. That doesn't take water. And that will help the community. Like, you know, we come from this individualistic, I want to solve it mentality because of capitalism. And that's not the way we're going to get out of this. We need to, like, really, truly be investing in this on a communal level. And because we are water scarce, we don't need everyone in town
watering stuff.
We don't.
Yeah.
Let's just be real. So
do you need for the food distribution? You need volunteers?
We always love to have volunteers. We meet at the firehouse, the new fancy firehouse community room on every Friday morning at 8:15. Anyone and everyone is always welcome. There's other ways to help. You know, you and I do the food pickup from Cerrios the first and third Thursdays. People can always meet us at the firehouse to help unload, help organize. I know the community garden does need volunteers, and they do have a plot dedicated to the food program. So there is a spot in the garden where all the plants there go straight to the food program and are donated and distributed every week. So that is another way to still help with the food program.
Do you ever go over there?
No.
We should make a little date.
Okay.
Anyways. No offense to the Wednesday people.
I do not go over there. Sorry, but I do a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering. I mean, I would say this. I'm one of those people that's like, I don't want to go on Wednesday. All the people are there looking at me. But, you know, you get out and be around the people, and actually it's not that bad.
It's not.
People are all right. Y'all are all right over there.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. Thank you, Community Garden.
It's great. No, it's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Yeah. Thank you, all Mobile Food Pantry team. Yes. Thank you, all my Madrid Food Program team, which is like a lot of DJs. C. Marie, yeah. Dream Queen, me, Possum Meatwater from time to time, although currently retired DJ. Hot Diggity. And I don't know Cash's DJ name, but Cash.
DJ Cash.
Who's on Cash Tuesday mornings. Money.
Well, so. I want to give a big thanks and shout out to y'all. I'm going to let you say your goodbyes. I'm going to, Travis, thanks for being here. We're going to get our schedule straight. Yeah, I'm going to have you plug that. That's why I'm doing him first.
Thanks for having me. And I hope everybody thinks about eating something that's alive once a day.
Yeah.
You know, people don't understand enzymes necessarily. And so I think with processed food or any kind of food, you need to eat something alive every day. And if you like Dead Prez, check out the song Be Healthy.
Yes.
All right. I'll look that up. Maybe I'll switch it. And I want to say, you know, I know you know this, but it's piggybacked on what you were talking about eating ramen to help your kid. And I want everybody out there to understand, we can't be there for our people if we're not here. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the things that we are forced into eating is going to send us to an early grave or have them kidneys turn sideways. And I've done that too, thinking I'm saving something. And you kind of are, but that is a choice that people have to make every day, is health, you know, just being here. So
My last plug is for the MCP. Thank you for reading that PSA. But at the MCP annual meeting this coming Monday, I have introduced my first agenda item. I normally just give my little committee updates, but I put an item on the agenda to discuss the MCP mission statement and what it means to all of us in the room as board members, community members, committee chairs, all the different roles we play in our lovely home. And I hope to address some of our food and water security issues on Monday, 6:00 here at KMRD.
Awesome. Well, I think I can be there. I love y'all. We'll be back next week in the Cab Radio at Linktree and on your social medias.
In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, aka Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.